Phil Clay, who is a Marine, wrote an opinion piece in 2017 in the New York Times. He wrote about his time in Iraq. He was a logistics officer, and at the time he was working in a medical unit. And as he was working in that medical unit, at one moment they have an injured Marine come in who was hit by a sniper. And the medical staff goes to work, and they work, and they work, and they work on this Marine, and they cannot revive him. And so in that moment, as they are mourning the loss of a Marine, all of a sudden, chaos breaks out once again. And as Clay turns around and looks, he notices that there are a group of Marines bringing in a stretcher, and on that stretcher is the very Iraqi who shot the Marine, the sniper. They had gotten the sniper. They had hit the sniper. And now these group of men who had shot at the sniper were now bringing the sniper into the medical unit. And within a moment's notice, the medical team begins to work. They begin attempting to save this man's life. And as he writes, he says, it feels like gallons of American blood are being pumped in to this Iraqi to save him. And in the end, they save the sniper. And the sniper gets transported with a personal nurse onto an airplane to a hospital to be taken care of. And Jesus says, you've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. In the text for the day, it is the last of Jesus' six interpretations in that opening section that we read last week. It is also a call which has caused tension in the life of the community and in the life of the individual. Those initially hearing these words are not the only ones that are struggling with what Jesus is asking of those when he says, follow me. As Jesus is teaching, one can imagine the reaction in who were in attendance that day. You can imagine many of them as they heard Jesus with their mouths open in disbelief, as they listen and as they watch, even shaking their heads a bit. Matthew tells us at the end of this in 7:28, now when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were astonished at his teachings. The crowds were astonished at Jesus' teachings. The crowd, as it hears what is a newcomer coming onto the scene, Jesus, a newcomer coming onto the scene, telling him this today, you shall love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. When they heard this, they may have even felt like us when we hear it read. We may have straightened up our back just a little bit. We may have felt a little bit of defensiveness coming over us and even prepared for a bit of a retort just to justify where we're coming from. You don't understand, Jesus. You don't understand what we've gone through on a daily basis. You don't understand what they've done to us. Jesus calling us to love has a way of doing that to all of us, I think. But we can't help but notice that without love, Jesus ends this with love. Without love, none of what Jesus has said before is possible. Without being able to love, and not just, as we're going to see, those who we like, then none of this is going to be possible. It's why we show the partnerships that we have today. Partnerships with Journey to Dream. How many of us really knew there were homeless teens amongst us and around us? We know teens go through difficult things, but how many do we really know there were homeless teens? The beauty of the work that's done at Main Street. And just a few doing a lot of work in Christ Haven, taking care of the vulnerable, the ones who are coming out of difficult homes. None of that is possible if Jesus doesn't finish with love. I mean, let's be honest. Let's truly be honest with ourselves. And this is a hard one. When we hear Jesus say, "You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbors and hate your enemies," our initial response is probably, "Absolutely, that makes sense. I can do that, Jesus. In fact, I'm pretty good at that. It sounds reasonable." I mean, when Jesus makes this statement, and this is the amazing thing about Jesus making this statement, when he quotes, "hate your enemy," Jesus isn't quoting a section of text. It's not as if Jesus is pulling from the Hebrew scriptures and saying, "Well, it says somewhere in the Hebrew scriptures that you can hate somebody." What I think Jesus is doing, and what I think we may hope and what we may try to assume when we read a text, is we're looking for, I think, at sometimes a warrant to be able to say, "Love your enemies, but," right? "Love your enemies, but." But I think what Jesus is doing in that moment is closing the door on assumptions that have been bubbling up to the surface at his time. So when Jesus says, "You've heard it," they've heard it, "Love your neighbor and hate your enemy," I think this is the common theme of the day. And Jesus stands before him and says, "I'm going to shut the door on that assumption pretty quick." Jesus is pushing back against any kind of validation within society that a hating of the enemy is legitimate. Hating one's enemy seems like, it even feels like, the natural human tendency. And I was reminded of that this week as I was reading Jonathan Pennington's notes on the Sermon on the Mount. And when he says this, and it's a good reminder, "For people long oppressed and who were currently living under the heavy cultural and financial boot of the Roman Empire, hating one's enemy seemed not only natural, but divinely patriotic. For the Jews of the time, it made sense, right? That they would hate their enemy. I mean, it feels natural, hating one's enemy. In a world that draws lines, in a world that lives into the saying, 'If you are not for me, then you are what? Against me.'" Yep, we know it. It's a saying we hear all the time. And that saying, think about what that saying does. It narrows the circle just a bit. And what's interesting was, me and Britt were talking about this, Hadley, this morning. We don't see that anywhere in Scripture either, do we? In fact, the one time that we do see it is when the disciples go to Jesus and say, "Hey, Jesus, we got a problem. See, you got this dude over here, and this dude is preaching your name and healing people, but it's not us. So how do we tell him to stop?" You know what Jesus says? What's interesting, Jesus doesn't say, "Oh, you're right. You're right." Right? I mean, yeah, they're not like us, so we need to. Jesus actually says, "No, no, what are you doing? Let him be." And what does Jesus say? "We need all the help we can get." Jesus doesn't narrow the circle in that moment. He actually widens it a little bit to the dismay of his disciples. "You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy" allows us to draw a circle a little closer to us, does it not? Enemies become easier to recognize. When we think about it, when we really think about the word enemy, just what that word means. And it seems harsh sometimes, but rhetoric in the age of "if you are not for me, but against me" allows for no leeway whatsoever. If you are not for me, if you do not think like me, if you do not believe like me, and if you don't vote like me, then you are against me. It allows zero leeway, and the next word we use is enemy. And that's a problem. And so Jesus stands here and says, "But I tell you, love your enemy." But don't think it's a new problem. Don't let us feel like it's a burden on us. I've been reading a book called Less Than Human by David Livingston Smith. And in it, he highlights how we've kind of come to this point in our society. And in the second chapter of this book, he takes us on a journey. And he takes us on a journey through the various steps that have occurred in human history to get us to a point of being able to label those who are not like us, those who think different than us, as enemy. And what he says is, in today's world, it's known as this thing called outgroup bias. And this is what it says. It outgroup by it says, we have a tendency of favoring members of our own community and then discriminate against all outsiders. So anybody who's different than us, outsiders, we discriminate against. And in fact, we probably know it better as an us versus them mentality. And I think we all know that, the us versus them mentality. But notice how he says this mentality works. And I think we can kind of grasp hold of this. This is what he says. He says, we are more industrious, conscientious, attractive, and so on than they are. When things go badly for one of us, it's an injustice. But when the same thing happens to one of them, it's because they brought it on themselves. You hearing the language here a little bit? On the flip side, when one of us experiences good fortune, it's richly deserved. But when one of them benefits from a windfall, it's an undeserved stroke of good luck. Think about the language that's used there. When it happens to us in our circle, well, it was hard work. It was because we're smart. But when it happens to them, someone sitting outside of our circle, well, they're just lucky. They don't understand everything. They just kind of, they didn't deserve it. And that's the problem, is it not? In an us versus them mentality, we have to find ways to ramp up the rhetoric so that others understand who deserves what in the world. And so we use the word enemy very easily in our day. Enemy gives us the freedom in our minds to treat people in a certain way. It frees us. What Jesus, I think, is trying to get us to do, if we use the word enemy, it actually frees us from seeing that a person, an actual human being, someone created in the image of God, whether they know it or not, is sitting right in front of us. Calling someone enemy allows us to treat them as they've treated us, or as we feel they've treated us, or if we feel threatened by them. Using this word, we think, gives us warrant to do this. And in doing so, we do the very opposite of what Jesus has intended for us in this. A community which seeks retribution. A community which seeks retribution on an enemy is no different than society today. And if you don't believe that, notice what Jesus says in the text. Notice what Jesus says in Matthew 5, 45. Read with me here, because Jesus' words haunt us when we would like to demean, when we would like to dehumanize, when we would like to term someone an enemy. Because if we do, Jesus has an answer for this. Jesus, in a moment, says, here's the problem if you want to treat people this way. Here's the problem if you call someone an enemy and forget that what's standing before you is the created image of God. Jesus says in Matthew 5, 45, for he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. God does not ignore any of his creation. Instead, what we find here is that God interacts with all of creation. Jesus is claiming a validity and even value beyond the lines of boundaries and divisions. There are no boundaries when it comes to God. He sends rain on sinner and on saint. He sends the sunshine on sinner and on saint. And so Jesus here in this text tells us that if we want to treat certain people with love because they're within our circle, if we want to treat them with respect because they're in our circle, then what does Jesus say? He says, well, guess what? Even the pagans do that. You're no different than society itself. The pagans treat the people like them well. But instead, Jesus says, you want to be different? You want to be an alternative community that speaks a different world into the life of this world? He says this. He says, then you will not fight violence with violence, because that only perpetuates the cycle of violence in the world. When we love our enemy, we as a community, held together by the Spirit, because that's the only way any of this is possible. The only way any of this is possible, enemy love, the only way any of this is possible is if we let the Spirit flow in our life. And if we can do this, then we are a community held by the Spirit that can offer the world a different way forward, an alternative way forward, an announcement that a new kingdom has entered into the world, a kingdom that attests that love has the ultimate power and final say over violence and evil. Love widens the circle instead of narrowing it. Love disarms instead of arms. We move away from an arms race and instead offer our arms outstretched. James Perkins is a president and founder of the Perkins Foundation of Reconciliation, Justice, and Christian Community in Jackson, Mississippi. He is a civil rights leader. He is a man who has spent a lot of his time in the hard places of Mississippi. And in his memoirs called Dream With Me, he talks about his interactions with poor white people. And I want you to hear what he says. This is what he writes. He says, the interactions between poor whites and blacks, there are a lot of accounts that tell of times when blacks taunted by whites with racial slurs would fire back with the insult, poor white trash, as if it were tit for tat. Just because some whites use heinous, callous, and abusive language to describe black people does not mean that we as black people are justified in responding with racial insults of our own. But I can understand how it comes about. We as a people have been beaten down so much that calling poor whites a hurtful name is almost a cry for dignity. I get it. But it is a backward cry. In a way, it's an attempt to make poor whites feel the way we did when whites would fling racial slurs our way. But for us to do the same thing to poor whites that wealthy whites were doing to us only throws everyone into the same heap. A better way is possible. We all must have the compassion, the wisdom, and the mutual respect to rise above slander, to rise above slurs and snubs, to a place of love. What we ought to be striving for today is a new language of love, an affirmation that will replace the hurtful slights. What if we started calling one another friend? What if we started calling one another friend, no matter race, no matter politics, no matter economic class? Friends. I like that. I think I like that too. I think Jesus in a moment is calling us not to dividing, but to friendship. And Jesus believes that love can even bring the enemy to friendship. It's going to take a whole way of looking at things. And that's why we partner with people who are showing us what it looks like to love those different than us. Because it's hard for us. We need others to help us see what it looks like, to help us become this mantra, so that we may become defenders of the one text that I think Jesus doesn't have a lot of defenders of. That we may become defenders. Love your enemy and bless those who persecute you. It's why we partner with Journey to Dream. It's why we partner with Main Street. And Kelly can show you real quick that we may see poor people in a different way, but Kelly just sees them as a person standing in front of them. And sometimes we need that just to be reminded of that. But what if we just started calling people friends? I think that may be the best start of all. Let's just call people friends and see what that does. It's also going to be hard. And maybe some of you in here are struggling with this. Maybe you have some animosity towards people that you know you shouldn't. Maybe like me, as you've gone through this week and read this text, you've gotten really mad at Jesus from time to time for even putting this in the text. It would have been easier, Jesus, if you just hadn't meddled in this part. But maybe you feel this burden on you. We want to help you. We're here to help you. We're here in any way. There are people next to you who will pray with you. There are people up front who will pray with you. All of us will pray for you. But come now as we stand and as we sing.